To him, and we will get ready to roll. I can see that we're going to need somebody to advance the pages on the PowerPoint slide presentations. An important function. I'll try. Let me see.
Do you have a question?
Somebody wants to dispute that point. Anybody? Okay, great. Fine, I'm Chairman Noah Fairman, and a little bit about who's helping us fund. I want to bring your attention to, if you have your blue folder, if you have your blue folder handy, there's two things in there I want to just bring out. One is the cover letter it has up at the top. It's a one-pager, sort of says up the top, CPSR, Computer Professionals. That's my letter to you. And if you're like me, you have probably not read it or maybe glanced at it, but I do want to bring your attention to that. And then also in that front package is a list of sponsors, which I admit that sponsors, when you're attending a conference, are not the most exciting thing, but when you're organizing, I want to welcome you to the conference. Okay, great. Okay, I think we can get started now, and I'm going to open up with a few comments for the conference as a whole before we start with the first session. My name is Hans Klein. I'm chairman of the board of Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility. I'm also the conference chair, and I think I know a fair amount of you and maybe exchanged emails or posted messages, so you may have seen my name before. And I want to start off by telling you a little bit about CPSR. And a little bit about who's helping us fund this particular event and give you a few logistical details, and then we'll move right on into the program. I want to bring your attention to, if you have your blue folder, if you have your blue folder handy, there's two things in there I want to just bring out. One is the cover letter it has up at the top. It's a one-pager, sort of says up the top, CPSR, Computer Professionals. That's my letter to you. And if you're like me, you have probably not read it or maybe glanced at it, but I do want to bring your attention to that. And then also in that front package is a list of sponsors, which I admit that sponsors, when you're attending a conference, are not the most exciting thing, but when you're organizing a conference, sponsors are wonderful, and I really I want to draw your attention to that, and I'm going to say a few words about that. But first, the letter here, and I'll read through parts of it. I want to welcome you to the conference. The conference that we have today is Governing the Commons, the Future of Global Internet Administration. We'll be looking at issues of DNS and internet shared resources, governance, ICANN, and so on. And I'm happy to say we've got a great program. I mean, you've seen it, the program of people who know a lot about these issues. A word about CPSR. CPSR's activities in internet policy are only the latest chapter in a long history of policy activism. CPSR was incorporated in 1983. It's like mind-bogglingly old. in this domain. In fact, it's as old as the domain name system itself. And CPSR is a mass membership professional association with a history of independent thought and action. And that independence of CPSR, I think, is very important because, as I've been looking at these debates, there's not a lot of independent players. There's a lot of interested factions and so on. And even some of the professional associations, sometimes I feel that they haven't been as outspoken as they might be because they feel they don't have the independence to get in this controversy. Way back in its founding, CPSR was a leader in correcting misconceptions of the technical reliability of the Star Wars SDI system. That's how CPSR got its start in the mid-80s. It's moved through other issues since then. CPSR pioneered civil liberties advocacy in cyberspace. You might have heard of EPIC, the Electronic Privacy Information Center. That is formerly CPSR's Washington office. It grew to be so big and successful that it became independent. But that started as a CPSR activity. And the Clipper chip, those issues, those were brought to the public by CPSR, particularly by Mark Rotenberg, who's now of EPIC. CPSR has also been very active in community networks throughout the U.S., and we hope to hold a major community network conference next year. And we've been active in the NII, National Information Infrastructure, policy debates over the years as well, again, promoting the public interest and social responsibility in that area. In all these debates, we have never shied away from taking principled stands and getting involved even in controversies at times. And I'm personally very proud of the organization because of that. Now, over the past 3 years, CPSR has gotten more active in the kind of policies we're looking here, in the DNS debates. We've submitted comments to Congress. We've published analyses of bylaws during some of the bylaw revision processes. We've held a number of conferences and forums on these issues, of which today's conference is the latest of those. And because of the way CPSR, the kind of organization we are, that affects the kind of things we can do. First of all, independence, very important. It allows CPSR to speak truth to power. We can raise tough issues as an organization. There's a lot of individuals out there who I think are raising some of these issues, but you'll notice if you really look around, I was very struck by this, there's not a lot of organizations that are taking a stance on these issues because they're controversial and they hesitate to get involved. CPSR is independent and can go in there. Furthermore, with the mass membership, CPSR's membership is approaching around 2,000. I'd say we're on the order of magnitude of maybe the Internet Society. We're certainly not an IEEE or an ACM, but it's a large organization, and we can speak. When we speak for the broad membership, for the computer profession, for the Internet community. We have a legitimate voice as well as an independent voice. And furthermore, we draw our activism from the members themselves. Our activist members have a long record of working together to realize the public interest. We've often served as an umbrella organization to get people who are doing activism, they join CPSR, and they do their work within the umbrella, within the framework of CPSR. I would say to many of you here today, a lot of people have joined the organization, and it's my hope that we can get more people who've been working solo to become a participation, to collaborate with others and generating a voice that brings this informed voice together with the legitimacy and resources of the organization. That's a potentially very powerful combination for influencing the policy process. In the one of the issues that we're looking at as a possible outcome, and there'll be some discussion on it during the next 2 days, is to have CPSR position itself as what I would call the progressive party in cyberspace, an organization working for social responsibility in cyberspace. And that relates to some ongoing developments that are happening now with ICANN. There's a question, is ICANN an organization? Some people are very supportive of it. Others are critical of it. CPSR hasn't taken a stand, but we have refrained from participating in ICANN events. That may change. That's an internal discussion. If we would participate, there are upcoming at-large elections coming up in ICANN, in which you have a kind of individual internet users electing officials to ultimately feed into the board of representatives of this global institution for cyberspace. And there will be elections coming up in CPSR. We're now considering whether we would participate to try to get the voice of social responsibility onto the board and get that represented more in cyberspace. And this evening we'll have a birds of a feather discussion group, and you're welcome to participate in that. Maybe we'll talk more at the reception about when that meeting will be held. Okay, that's my introduction of CPSR. Let me just quickly bring your attention to the sponsors here, the sponsors who have greatly helped us and made this all possible. There's two major sponsors, the Marino Institute, located here in the greater Washington area, Northern Virginia, and the Open Society Institute, the Soros Foundation. The Soros Foundation is helping particularly with the web page and with the online proceedings that will follow this conference. In addition, we've had a lot of help from smaller organizations, a little bit less finances, the Consumer Project on Technology, Jamie Love's been a big help. We've gotten a lot of help from the Georgia Institute of Technology, that's my home institution, from the College of Computing, from the School of Public Policy, from the Ivan Allen College, and the School of Literature, Communication, and Culture, all at Georgia Tech. The Syracuse University School of Information Studies is another co-sponsor. Name.space, Paul Guerin, has been a co-sponsor. Cyberspace Policy Institute at GWU and the Communication, Culture, and Technology Program at Georgetown University both helped out quite a bit, helping us find facilities. NGI Associates, represented by Tony Rakowski, has been a major donor of time and energy into this. And finally, the Berkman Center for Internet and Society up at Harvard Law School. They'll be helping us to take the audio tapes that result from this conference and put them up on the web. And finally, as supporters, we have ICANN Watch and Internet Public Policy Network. So many thanks to our sponsors for helping us with this. Okay, last comments. Some logistics. For some cases, the most important information. Where are the bathrooms around here? If you exit the room and walk to the right, they'll be on your left. Out the door, down the hall, to your left. Now you know. Where are public phones around here? In the direction of the bathrooms. Exit, walk to the right, first left, and you'll see them down in that area, sort of in the direction of the bathrooms. I've been told to request, please, no smoking in the rooms. Please turn off your cell phones and turn off beepers and put them in rattle mode so that we have our attention focused here. One last thing on our sponsors. You'll notice our star system. I can't claim that I fully understand it myself, but one of the important ones is that the silver star indicates a sponsor. So if you see someone with a silver star, many thanks to them, and you can express your appreciation to them as well. Okay, the conference has begun. We can now move on to our first session, and I will yield the podium to Teresa Amato.
Thank you, Hans, and good afternoon. Kiwi Romana Sum, Ich bin ein Berliner. I am an internet user. Today, the global boast of freedom is I am online. I am an internet user. I don't know much about addresses and protocols. I don't own a domain name. I don't sell anything online. I don't even belong to CPSR or ISOC. And I don't work for NSI. I am just an individual who uses the internet to work, to play, and to live better. So why am I losing sleep over the current attempt to administer the future of the internet? In November of 1998, when the Department of Commerce designated ICANN, the Internet Corporation of Assigned Names and Numbers, served as the entity responsible for four key functions of the internet, many questioned why a U.S. private sector, nonprofit corporation would be an appropriate vehicle for global internet administration. If the U.S. just needs someone to assign names and numbers, why do we need to create a private sector, nonprofit governing structure to do this? And why should this global common resource be subject to the powers of the Attorney General of California? If the idea is to create a global governing structure, that will make the internet policy decisions about the domain name system, the allocation of address codes, the assigning of protocol parameters, and the management of the root server system, then what will the structure be? What are the powers of this new regime? What is its source of legitimacy? And how will it embody the inclusive bottom-up characteristics of the net while ensuring competition and stability? In January, the Berkman Center for Internet and Society hosted a membership conference to discuss models for ICANN membership. In the ensuing months, several stakeholders from around the world poured a tremendous amount of energy, working fast and furiously to create three ICANN supporting organizations, several working groups, and provisional charters. Yet, as uncivil wars unfolded on the net about how this entity called ICANN should be developed, if at all, and as reports of the ICANN meetings and resolutions in Singapore and Berlin were posted, distress signals started to emerge with greater volume. In late spring, Michael Friedman, David Post, and David Farber, who are all on the conference agenda, created ICANN Watch. And in early summer, Ralph Nader and Jamie Love sent Esther Dyson a letter filled with questions seeking some answers about the powers and role of this entity that would administer the Internet. Congress held a hearing entitled, Is ICANN Out of Control? Last month, I had the opportunity to go to Santiago, Chile for the Consumer Project and Technology and have my first-hand observation of ICANN from the user's perspective. The first morning of the first day of my first chance to see how ICANN operates, I was told I couldn't attend the government advisory committee meeting despite the fact that it is a standing committee of ICANN and despite the fact that ICANN's bylaws state that ICANN shall operate in an open and transparent manner. The secretary of this committee said that being a U.S. citizen didn't constitute having the proper credentials. So my first observation is, why is administration of the Internet secret? On the afternoon of the first day, I watched as the domain name supporting organization people met. ICANN is structured to allow seven predominantly commercial constituencies to discuss the administration of domain names. There's no room for the individual domain name holders. When the DNSO General Assembly passed a resolution to support a petition for inclusion of the domain, individual domain name holders, the ICANN board did not accept the General Assembly's resolution. So, why is Internet domain name administration dominated by the commercial interests? Why is there no room for the individual domain name holders in the discussion of that policy? What is the relationship between the constituencies and the board? And where are the voices of all the other stakeholders? On the morning of the second day, I learned that the ICANN grievance procedure prevents the ordinary user from having any role in determining who would be the arbiter of disputes over ICANN's decisions. The supporting organizations can help pick the judges, but the members, the Internet users, have no say. When ICANN starts to pass policies that look like legislation, such as determining the terms of agreement between ICANN-accredited registrars and registrants, and the rights or lack thereof of end users, where does an Internet consumer go to seek redress and under what law? Making policies for the assignment of names and numbers does not seem to be the equivalent of just assigning the names and routing the numbers. On the afternoon of the second day, I learned that all of the competing businesses can sit around and agree exactly on the dispute policies that they will use. I also learned that the ICANN board was willing to create a whole level of bureaucracy to avoid giving potential future, maybe we will have them, maybe or not, someday members of the corporation that they've created any derivative action rights. At any point, I started to wonder why someone who's a user would want to be a member of an organization in which the structure looks like it's tilted against them. On the third day, the first official meeting of the ICANN board, I learned that a public meeting of ICANN could cover such diverse subjects as the ongoing lack of membership, dispute resolution, supporting organizations, grievance procedures, domain names, funding, terms of office, and approve everything with little discussion and no objection in record speed. Thus, a month ago, I left Chile with the impression that everyone was in a very big hurry to get something done, that disenchantment with the status quo and the prevalent feelings among those present that anything would be better than the United States government and network solutions meant that Internet government decisions would be made by ICANN even if they were no more than a tin can. The developments of the last decade make apparent the need to discuss what we are creating in the name of Internet administration. CCSR should be congratulated for hosting this conference. Take a serious look at the challenges of governing a global common resource. What kind of administration is necessary for the Internet?
And is there any current institution or model fit to administer the Internet? Here is the unenviable position of helping to enlighten us about the last decade of technological and governance issues, and where ICANN is, should, or could be going are our three very distinguished panelists, one of them arriving late. So we're going to begin with Hans Klein, who's going to speak about the governance issues, the last decade of governance issues, and their bios are on the web and in the packet. Thank you.
Okay, now to type B again, and if you hit save the... Okay, I'm going to give us the sort of overview talk. You heard a bit of an overview just now. Thanks, Sheree, for doing that. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the big picture, set the picture for the rest that follows in the conference. And the conference is Governing the Commons, the Future of Global Internet Administration, and the overview I'll give touches on what's the fundamental issue in all this. We forget that, there's a risk we'll forget it. I'll talk a bit about that. And I'll talk a bit about the history and identify some of the controversies, at least that they exist, so that you understand the big picture. For some of you, there's a substantial number of the audience probably that knows all these things better than I do because you've been living it perhaps full time or more. But for many of you, you either know something that happened here, a little less there, or perhaps the overall complexity has just kind of overwhelmed you. And this will give you an opportunity to get some bearings. So next slide, please. What's the basic issue in all this? What is all this about? And the basic issue are shared resources in this technological system called the Internet. The Internet is a highly centralized system. Forget the anarchy, the rhetoric of anarchy and freedom and everybody doing all their own thing. It turns out the Internet is quite a centralized system. And that centralization derives from a couple factors in the system. It derives, first of all, from some unique parameters in the system, unique names and unique addresses. The names, the domain name system, cpsr.org and so on. There's just one cpsr.org that corresponds to our server, and that has to be then, that uniqueness has to be managed. There's a central repository for those unique names and unique numbers as well. There's unique IP addresses. And there's some, either an entity to manage those unique resources or a procedure to manage those unique resources. Something has to be there because the technology has at its core these unique identifiers. It also has a root server architecture, a root architecture that goes up. Sometimes you see pictures of this, and it all goes up to the top. And essentially, there is one root of this whole addressing architecture. This relates the names and the numbers to physical machines and so on. And this has to be operational for the entire net, another central node. Now, these are shared resources, a collective resources, and everybody depends on them. And they create a need for some kind of management of these shared resources. And that is to say that they require shared administration. Shared resources at the technical level require shared administration at the institutional level, and that's what we're calling governance. So by the term governance, I mean in terms of the top authority over an entity. That's one view. But corporate governance, also to a certain extent, it's governance like the government of the United States, to the extent that whoever handles the shared administration may get into regulatory issues and the kinds of activities that governments do perform. So governance in both its meanings is here for simpler sake. So how do we approach this idea of shared administration? It gets us into institutional design. The big question here is, what does the governing institution, what does this administration look like? And it raises classical questions of governance and constitutional design. First of all, whatever this organization is, it has to be effective. You want to have someone performing administration in an effective and efficient manner, getting the tasks done. Secondly, you want it to be legitimate. Whoever does these administrative functions will have power over everyone on the Internet because they're going to control resources that everyone depends on. And therefore, it's important that it be legitimate, that it not abuse the power that's been entrusted to it. And that requires a couple of features. One is representation, that the parties subject to it are represented in the decision-making apparatus. It requires that decisions are made in a transparent manner, in an accountable manner, and so on. So this is the kind of problem. Shared resources at the technical level require shared administration. Gets us into institutional design. This institution should both be effective and efficient, and it should be legitimate. That's the kind of things we've been getting into. And hold that slide there. So let's look how this question has unfolded over time. And it's a long history, and you're going to get it all here pretty much on one slide. So this, the quest to design a governance institution has been going on really for about 10 years, sort of unfolded throughout the 1990s. But we'll go back in the 70s and 80s. The internet was kind of in its infancy, heading towards adolescence, if you will. A lot of administrative functions were performed in a relatively informal manner. Particularly, we had one person, graduate student, who started performing some of these tasks. His name is John Fussell, and he started, I think, keeping track of numbers for the net. And over time, this function became important as the internet grew. But essentially, it's the way it was administered was by one person, because he'd always been doing it. It wasn't a lot of planning. And it was done, yes, effectively, yes, efficiently. Was it legitimate? Well, kind of, because John Fussell, in his person, had a lot of integrity and trust. So people felt that it was a workable solution. But it was clear that some kind of more formal solution would have to be developed. And some of the people who were looking at that, I'd say one person who anticipated this in the 90s was Vint Cerf, who was one of the founders and promoters of the Internet Society, which was incorporated in 1992. And that early vision of the Internet, of ISOC, would be that it would be a non-profit, public interest, non-governmental organization with responsibility for some of these collective resources and for managing them. And the ISOC Foundation in 1992 was intimately related to these issues of governance. I should say that I've been a member of ISOC for more than half of its existence by now, and I was not aware of this. You might not be as well. I think that's kind of interesting to discover that right from inception these governance issues played a role. Now, another important chapter in the evolution of governance is when the National Science Foundation contracted administration of MAINS out to Network Solutions, Inc. When Network Solutions began performing the administration of one of the shared resources, like the shared MAINS identifiers. And it began to get into some of these issues. Was it effective? Was it efficient? I think the consensus is yes. Was it legitimate? Less consensus there. There were some controversies there over who could get a disputed domain name, the classic issues over trademarks and so on. Those began to arise in the mid-90s. Moving forward to the history, then there was a big event in 1996-1997, the infamous acronym, the IAHCMOU, which was, if nothing else, a bold attempt to create an institution that would perform the administration of shared resources. And that involved a number of important players. It raised a lot of issues about legitimacy, because the people who advocated this and the organizations who advocated the first subset of the players in the larger internet community, people said, well, this is not everybody who's decided to change the way the internet is controlled. It's just a few, and they felt that it lacked legitimacy. It would have been moved its operations outside of the United States. It hackles up of one of the stakeholders in this process, the U.S. federal government. And it generated a lot of controversy. For many of us, that's when we became aware of this governance issue, 1996-1997, with this attempt by Internet Society, ITU, IPO, you know these things, to make a bold solution to the problem of governance. Continuing, we had in 1997-1998 a reaction to that bold move on the part of the U.S. federal government. And we saw that the Department of Commerce became the lead agency working on this, particularly the NTIA, IRA Magazine gets involved, and so on. And we see the writing of a green paper, a policy discussion piece, and then a white paper, a policy statement, that in turn launched a final process for the drafting of bylaws. And then in November 1998, so now Less than a year from now, this corporation was created, an internet corporation. Institution to form the administration shared resources, as defined by the technology. Next. Now, in all this, you had some recurring problems, and they continue to recur today. And those problems are there's a lack of consensus, right? Very often, some subset or small number of players would attempt to make a decision on behalf of everybody over shared resources that affect everybody. And it was felt that the decision was not broadly shared. There was some people acting on behalf of all of them. And some of the most proactive groups have been the legacy research community, often closely associated in our minds with the Internet Society, trademark interests, often associated with the International Trademark Association or the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO. To a certain extent, the Department of Commerce has been of late a participant, and some of the larger corporations with high stakes in this area. But there have been problems of consensus in the decision making. Similarly, there have been in this history a perceived lack of due process. Decisions are sometimes made that have not represented, that have not been born out of consultation with others. One of the most extreme ones was the unilateral redirection of the route by Don Pestel. Right? Don Pestel was our governance institution, and at one point he could take a decision that was quite dramatic and really raised questions in redirecting the route as to who controls it and if it was in. But other issues have raised questions of due process. The surprising move for the IAHCMOU and leading even up to today, some of the way that the ICANN, board of directors of ICANN were appointed to raise issues of due process. Now, making things more problematic through all this, even if you have an attempt to design an institution that suffers from a lack of consensus, suffers from a lack of due process, and then on top of it all, you have the meteoric growth of the internet, which is exacerbating all these problems, right? Because you went from a situation where these were issues that nobody cared about and nobody understood, to within a few years where major interests cared intensely about it, even though still nobody understands. Very few people can understand the issue. The level of understanding it remains a challenge, but the stakes involved have gone from being not very much to being very high in a short period of time, and that's really throwing oil on the fire. So, today, where do we stand? We've got this thing called ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. We'll be celebrating its first birthday pretty soon. And ICANN is this institution that performs the functions that any institution has to perform. It solves this problem of shared administration, of shared resources. It has mechanisms for representation. To do that, it has a board of directors, and those board of directors, there's 19 directors, and they represent certain functional interests, domain names, addresses, protocols, and so on. The board of directors also has geographic representation from the at-large membership, or the bylaws define the board of directors. They're not there yet, and I'll talk about that. But institution, in its bylaws, defined mechanisms for representation. So the question of legitimacy was addressed largely through the board of directors. And the question of performing its tasks was also addressed. Some of the key things that it does is it's responsible for root server operation, responsible for the operation of a shared registry system, for accrediting registrars, so-called front office operations that will assign allow users to get domain names and so on. So that's ICANN. It addresses the issues of legitimacy and of operational effectiveness and efficiency. But of course, controversies continue on issues on a number of domains. First of all, legitimacy. Has it actually achieved legitimacy? Many people argue no, it has not. Or even though it has this nice definition of a board of directors and representation and so on, the first board of directors was not elected. It is not right now a democratic institution. It has a group of electors who were appointed through a process that many people didn't understand and didn't know about, and even to this day, many are not that clear about. It's held closed meetings, i.e. it has not met the criterion of transparency. Who are these people and what are they doing in that room? It hasn't always been an easy question to answer. And it has, for accountability, when people have been critical of its operations, has it been held accountable? Well, I think that it has been at times quite dismissive of its critics. And if you criticize ICANN, or sometimes your personal motives get questioned. And as an observer, I have been surprised that sometimes what appear to be very legitimate questions and criticisms have been addressed, not head-on, but the return has been, who are you to ask those questions? What are you trying to achieve? What's really going on? Even though the questions themselves were quite legitimate. So it's got problems of legitimacy for representation, for transparency, for accountability. And it also has, there's been controversies on more substantive decisions made by ICANN. This initial interim board, despite the fact that its legitimacy is not well established, it has forged ahead and taken fast action on a number of policy areas. So I suppose the good news is, has it been effective? Has it been efficient? Well, yeah, it's settled a lot of policy issues, and it's done it rather quickly. Has it been legitimate? Maybe less so. So you've got a problem there of, well, gosh, what, are these decisions really based on the foundations of the community as a whole or some subset again? And what are some of these substantive decisions? Well, it set terms for accreditation of registrars. And that has created some controversies because it gives it essentially life and death powers over businesses. And they're saying, well, who is this organization out there that suddenly controls my lifeline, my ability to operate, and my right to perform registrar services? It has set fees. And of course, we saw the controversy. They were strongly criticized in Congress for taxation without representation, imposing fees that people had to pay, because you got to pay when the person on the other side controls all the shared resources that your survival depends on. So you got to pay it. And who are they? Well, we don't really know. They make the decisions behind closed doors, and somebody appointed them, we don't really know. So that generated a lot of controversy. There are decisions have been made about country code top-level domains, and that's raised the specter again of this organization having quite a bit of power to decide who can manage and control and operate top-level domains. And finally, quite recently, there's a lot of movement on a uniform dispute resolution policy for domain names. And here, the question is, how is this decision made? Has it been favoring the trademark interest over the free speech interest, and so on? It's a complex one. Let's say that we certainly know everyone agrees there's controversy over that. So there's been a lot of controversies on legitimacy and controversies over substantive decisions. And now, what are some of the current issues? Well, I think some of the questions looking into the near-term future are, how are the finances of this organization? You know, there's some question. ICANN is having trouble funding its operations, particularly after it was denied the right to impose this $1 fee on domain names. And so right now it has heavy debt and it's running on loans. But the organization's finances of this new institution are shaky right now. And we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't think anybody knows. That's a big question mark. And we'll keep an eye on that issue. Another question, and sometimes people disagree, is this a hypothetical? Is this a real possibility? Maybe the whole decision to privatize this process could be reversed, right? That's often held up as the bogeyman. If you don't support ICANN, then the U.S. government will take back the administrative powers, and the U.S. government will run the internet. And you don't want that, so you should buy into ICANN. Stop criticizing it. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly there have been some questions raised. Will this whole move towards privatization, towards giving administrative authority, I mean, some of these governance functions to a private entity, will that be upheld? Another question, sort of in the future, is, gee, maybe someday somebody will sue ICANN. Right? There's a lot of questions. Is it exercising authority? Does it have a legitimate basis for that? Well, those are the kinds of questions that generate lawsuits. When the company says, when one party says, we're denying you the right to perform registration, the other party says, I don't think you can do that, and I'm taking you to court, and we'll have a decision that's rendered there. Well, we'll see if something like that might happen in the near future. And then there's a final point that is my personal favorite, and we're going to be talking about it later on in the program, and that's the stability of the technology. Right? If you think about it, all these issues of institutional design and governance, they all derive from the underlying shared resources. Right? Got it? Technology is called the Internet. The design of that technology has shared resources, identifiers, domain names, root operations, addresses, and so on. And those shared resources give rise to this baroque institutional overstructure. But how stable is the technology? You know, technology changes, and Internet technology seems to change a lot faster than many other technologies. So this authoritative single root, gee, could the technology be redesigned, or will it change so that you won't have an authoritative single root? Because if you don't have a single root, you don't have to have a single institution overseeing the single root. How about domain names? Will there be domain names forever, or will we see an evolution towards a different way of naming things and identifying addresses on the Internet? And maybe it won't require this unique system. In that case, maybe you won't need a global institution to manage the unique domain. There'll be a panel tomorrow morning that talks about this issue. But I think that's one of the most interesting, because you've got a complex organization sitting on top of a very dynamic technology. And maybe the technology will evolve to the point that some of today's issues will just go away. I'm not saying that'll happen, but it might happen. And then on my last slide here, it's an issue I just mentioned earlier, and it's on my mind, and I invite you to think about it as well. And that's these upcoming at-large elections. ICANN will be holding elections for board members who will ultimately represent individual users. There are 9 board seats set aside for at-large representation. And it raises really interesting questions about democracy in cyberspace. If you believe that ICANN is an organization that maybe it has some flaws, but ultimately you can work within this system, you should work within the system, it's the only game in town, you have to work within the system, that's a big question. But if you decide yes, that the answer is yes, to participate in some of the processes that have been set up, then this issue of the at-large elections is quite an interesting one. And if they're legitimate, it raises issues of, gee, are there any organizations out there with it that already have a bunch of committed and activist users who care about these issues who might participate? And I can name a few, and one of them would be CPSR. And we'll be talking among our membership to see if this is something, a direction for this organization, the idea of being a sort of socially responsible voice in cyberspace, and perhaps informing the electorate in elections, performing some analyses, developing some positions, nominating some candidates. We'll see how that develops in the next few weeks, but we're going to start thinking about that intensively in these next 2 days and probably tonight. Okay, so there's the overview of some of the issues, and I'm sure I did violence to almost everything I touched on, because almost everything, my experience is you say anything about ICANN and someone corrects you on a detail that seems minor, but it's perhaps very important. So bear with me. That's a big general picture, and now we'll hear some more different aspects of this introduction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hans. Here for next from Professor Tamar Frankel.